Still with me on the line, Ozwelakhe Mnguni from Benguela Global Fund Managers and Jonathan Fisher from PSG Wealth Santon Grayson. Ozwelakhe, we were talking about AVI and Long for Life. The viewer's thesis was that AVI could be buying Long for Life. Jonathan doesn't really seem to think that is the case. Neither of them issued a cautionary at the same time, even though AVI and Long for Life are both actually trading under cautionary. Firstly, your view on that as a possibility. Otherwise, your view on what is actually happening at AVI, what do you think is going on there to warrant it being under cautionary?
Yeah, it's quite a difficult thing. And I think the viewer's thesis is probably quite an extreme. I mean, if you think about AVI, it's a collection of brands that's what they pride themselves in that have pricing power. And I think a fair amount of assets within the Long for Life, actually some of them are essentially resellers. They don't necessarily create things. I mean, I think Sportsman Warehouse that they own, it's one of the biggest assets in that. And you must go see the, I visited the show in Woodmead, I mean, shocking state. So I don't think AVI probably would be looking at stuff like that. Probably more something that can either enhance the existing portfolio, which I doubt they could be looking at stuff from a Long for Life, or they might be selling another asset. But I think it's all speculation. Certainly, one doesn't know.
Can I just not to belabor this point, but one of the suggestions for Long for Life is that it spins off the Sportsman's Warehouse, Outdoor Warehouse group. I mean, this would be, I think, the second or third time it's been listed separately. Would that be quite a good retail asset to pick up? Do either of you think that it would have a sort of decent rating kind of in the retail fraternity?
Look, I think the concern that I have is that their pricing is way out of line with the market. I mean, they product some of their products, and like I said, I visited one of their biggest stores, and the pricing is completely out of line with what they have. The store is not in a appetizing state. You know, the shopping experience is not so great. You don't get a lot of assistance. So you might sell it, and somebody who likes that kind of business might pick it up and clean it up. I mean, then you have to sell it at a big discount to make it attractive. But could it be a standalone business? And that area is quite overtraded of late.
Yeah. Okay. Jonathan, your thoughts there?
I agree. I think that to be a separately listed company, it's probably too small. I think its competitors are too big. And I agree. I mean, you know, this overlaps with some of the other players out there, like Mr. Price. Certain items there priced much, much cheaper than what you'd find at Sportsman's Warehouse. Mm. Yeah, it's all speculation right now, but I think someone's looking to buy this company out, yeah.
Okay, I'm going to get to a couple of other local questions first, but one of the more perplexing questions for traders and investors at the moment is what is happening to China. Its economic growth is slowing. We had the results out today, 4.9% growth for the third quarter. The Communist Party is taking a much keener interventionist stance in social issues, and at the same time, the authorities are keen to stress China's investable appeal. This week, the Hong Kong Exchanges and Clearing Market launched a new futures contract that makes it easier for international investors to trade Chinese stocks. Bloomberg spoke to Wilfred Yu, co-head of markets, on what the expansion means for demand for Chinese shares.
I think it's important that we look into the trajectory of how global investors' interest in China shares, no matter it's Hong Kong or access to domestic. I think over the course of last couple of years, we have seen a consistent growth in terms of global interest represented by their stock holdings in domestic A shares as well as Hong Kong stocks as well. So I think we are still at a very early stage of that allocations into China, and it will take many, many years to go. Obviously, we do recognize there are short-term some noises around in the markets and volatility that's being seen. But I do think that it's important to focus more onto the long-term and the trajectory path that we are looking at the moment.
Jonathan, just on the Chinese GDP numbers and the Chinese, markets, they didn't seem to be a terribly negative reaction to the Chinese GDP stats today. Why is that?
Look, it's a little bit lower than what you would hope for and expecting. I think it came in at 4.9%. you know, we expect China to be growing at 5.5-6%. That's what we're used to, and that's what we're accustomed to. Didn't knock the market at all. It's difficult to say. It might just be an anomaly in, you know, the monthly GDP numbers that come out of China. We hope that that is the case, because if there is a continued slowdown in those numbers for the next few months, it does impact our economy and a lot of our resource companies that export to China. So it would be a concern.
Yeah. So we're lucky just on that Chinese futures contract that's been launched. Things have gone quite quiet in the last few weeks as far as the regulations are concerned. There was a real, it felt like there was a sort of an assault. One day to the next, there would be some new directive from the Chinese Communist Party that really spooked investors in Chinese stocks. That seems to have calmed down. Do you think, you know, if it's like this, I actually hang on, everyone. We are still open to international investors. We'd like to create a market that's attractive, where you can make money. How do you feel about the Chinese stock market at the moment?
Well, I think one has to basically maybe take a step back and look at what China did over the last 15, 20 years. What they did is they created an environment that looked like it was very conducive to capitalist approach of the economy, so businesses could establish and make profit. And they seem to now have taken a step back. After attracting a massive amount of capital, they've taken a step back to basically intervene and try and redirect the business community in a certain direction that benefits the Communist Party. And I think what it does is it has reduced Chinese stocks' attractiveness from a point of view that your investment, which is one of the major components of their economy, the investment has been slowing down, and I think we've seen with the Evergrande situation that will further slow down the economy. And also, they've had battles with power supply lately after their spat with Australia, and they've actually been cutting or rationing power. And that is what has actually impacted the GDP number more recently, that they couldn't actually, the production had to be pushed back in some areas. So would I be excited about the Chinese economy? I think there is very, very good potential in that market, but I think the short term might be quite volatile from an economic point of view.
Okay. Then moving back to our home market, there's a question on City Lodge, and the viewer says extraordinary recovery in the share price by City Lodge today, buoyed no doubt by the eventual opening of the skies and pent-up discretionary spending on leisure. For years, the preserve of the corporate traveller, however, the return to office scenario remains in doubt, and as much as the company itself has gone through significant cost of sales introspection, so too have many corporates, decreasing its lettable area footprint, being chief among these. However, let me not be a complete killjoy. The share is experiencing an Indian summer of sorts, and long may it continue. Jonathan, do you think City Lodge is on the next leg up, or are you in the killjoy camp?
Look, it's up. It's had a couple of legs up over the past few weeks, in fact, the past month. If you look at a 30-day chart, it's steps going up. So it's had a hell of a run after those recent set of numbers. And I think they could be in a good space as long as we don't have any more lockdowns, COVID becomes controllable, and we start seeing some kind of sense of normality with respect to people moving around the country and business people moving around and doing whatever, traveling for business purposes. City Lodge is quite fortunate in that I think their break-even is about 35% occupancy, round about there, between 35 and 40%. So anything above that, they start making some profit, which is quite good, I think, because normally, you know, you're looking at 50, 55%. That's what I seem to recall about City Lodge. They also try to, like, reconfigure some of their businesses, and they're renting out rooms on a daily basis just to work as a office away from home or away from wherever people have been working at a discounted rate with all the business facilities available. How successful that's been, I'm not sure. Yeah.
So we're lucky. I think City Lodge's occupancy, I'm sure, is still below that that level at which they would break even. But how do you explain the moves higher in the share price?
I mean, if one looks at where the revenue is compared to, say, 2-3 years ago, I mean, it's basically a third of what it had. It was probably making 1.5 billion in revenue. It's now making 500, probably. And the fixed cost of sales is around that level of 500. So they're begging even at the GP level. And I agree with Jonathan that, I mean, it's not going to take a lot for them to turn around into a profitable state. And certainly, the one question that remains that with the Zoom and all these teams, is business travel going to go back to where it was before? I mean, I doubt it. But I certainly think that there could be some scope for them to deliver significantly improved profits. But it looks like it's all priced in to some extent.
Okay. Gents, I'm going to get to your stock picks now, if you don't mind. Jonathan, what are you keen on at the moment?
Okay, so I'm going to go for a big French energy producer called Total Energies. They came out with the end of July half-year numbers about a week or two ago, and they were excellent. They really shot the lights out. I mean, to give you an idea, the sales number was up 30%. EBITDA was up 59%. Net debt was down 21% and free cash flow was up 143%. And this is on the back of high oil prices or high Brent crude. Then controlling their cost structures and just a very, very buoyant market. They're also the leaders amongst their peers in trying to green and bring green energy into the mix. They're on a PE of 8 and a dividend yield of 6%.
Okay.
And the share price is doing pretty well. We like it.
Yeah. Well, long for them. May the oil price rally continue. Not so good for the rest of us. As well. Okay. How about you?
Yeah, I'm going for Coca-Cola Isaac, which is a Coca-Cola bottler based in Turkey. It's got operations in Turkey, Kazakhstan, and a bit of Iraq. And it's quite a well-run business. It's got healthy margins, and it's grown relatively well in the last period. I think they were up close to 30-40% in revenue in the last reporting season. And certainly the business is exposed to some growing markets, including Pakistan, and they've tried to diversify the business away from the sparkling kind of drinks to more towards the stills and the juices, and they seem to be making some headway in that area.
Okay.
It's trading at about 11 times.
Yeah. Interesting pick, both of you. Thank you very much for broadening our offshore portfolios tonight. Zwelakhe, Jonathan, nice to see you both. Thanks for joining us. Zwelakhe Mguni is from Benguela Global Fund Managers. Jonathan Fisher is from PSG Wealth, Santon Grayson and Bright. Kamalo will be back tomorrow to take more of your stock-related questions. Have a good evening.